Welcome to the P3 Pilates Progressions Program, brought to you by Personalized Pilates. If you would like more information about the whole P3 program, please visit www.personalizedpilates.com. I'm Katrina Foe, your host for tonight. I'm a second-generation Pilates master teacher trainer, and I'm here to answer all your Pilates and anatomy questions so that you can take your Pilates teaching to the next level.
Hello. Tonight we've got some great questions. A lot of you have been sending in your questions, and I thank you for that. So if you have any questions, please remember to go ahead and you can email them ahead of time to me at katrina@personalizedpilates.com, or you can call in live. And tonight is a live show, so you're free to call in 347-838-9945. So hopefully we'll hear from somebody. Usually, though, people tend to like to be anonymous and send their questions in, so, and that's fine, too. I know a lot of you guys that have families and are busy at night or you're teaching, go figure, so that is a perfectly acceptable way of getting your questions answered. Quick note, I wanted to mention, all of you that are listening, I would love it if when you go on iTunes that you would not only subscribe to the P3 podcast, but also, if you would fill in a rating, those are really helpful to get us noticed more. So if you would rate us and give us a review, if you want to let people know what you think about it, that would be awesome, and I would really appreciate it. Again, that's just iTunes, and look for the Pilates Progressions Program podcast. Have a great time doing that, though, and I hope that you guys enjoy it as well, so that you guys want to leave a nice rating. Okay, so here is tonight's first question. Good evening, Katrina. I hope you and your precious family are doing splendidly. I'm currently teaching class number 11. I love the side-lying teaser. My Pilates girls and I had fun with it today. Me describing and teaching them, executing and experiencing. It was an adventure. And the point, flex, bend, straighten variations for parakeet were surprisingly challenging as well. She wrote, question one. I have been managing my sacroiliac pain for a couple of years. I really want to be able to zip up my inner thighs during all the prone body work, swan on the tower, swan in the chair, long box, etc. I have not been able to come up with a consistent body connection cue for myself to allow my inner thighs to stay zipped up without firing in my low back. Here are some of the things that I'm doing. One, I sit on top of my sits bones and keep the medial distal end of my femur pressed gently together to support pelvic stability in the SI joint. Sometimes I use one of the purple balls, the size of the ones you have at the studio, at Personalized Pilates, to hold between my thighs. Two, when doing single leg kick, double leg kick, swimming, etc., I press my pubic bone down to the mat, unweight my belly from the floor, parentheses, engage my transverse abdominis, and lengthen my torso before moving into spinal extension. My quadriceps and IT bands are very tight from years of running and cycling in my pre-Pilates days. I'm working towards lengthening them. Three, short spine is a surefire way to cause a burn in the muscles across the back of my pelvis. Argh. I love the spinal articulation aspects of it, but the after effects are very uncomfortable. Four, oddly, long spine doesn't bother my back. Help, thank you. All right, so lots of little things stick out to me that I want to address and mention. First off, the sideline teaser is one of my absolute favorites too, and I think it's such a fun variation on the tower. I just love it, and highly encourage you guys, if you haven't done the side-lying teaser, it's a classical exercise that has kind of been lost a lot of the times, but it is so fun, and you can really play with it in terms of your cues. When you start lying on the side, really start to side bend first before you roll over into your teaser, and then try to stay in your teaser as long as you can as you roll over onto your side and then lower down from the side kind of position, it'll make it so much harder. Versus, this is a great exercise with a class because people can kind of just roll up into a teaser sideways and make it easier if they can't handle the hardness. That's kind of awkward sounding, the difficulty level that I'm talking about. But it's really nice because you can give people the option to make it as hard as they want. And I love it when you've got exercises like that. Well, let's face it, most of the Pilates exercises have that edge to them, but this one's just a really nice one. It's very playful, too. I'm glad you enjoyed it as well. I love hearing feedback, especially on the specific exercises and such. Okay, so as far as your sacroiliac pain, first off, I love that you really want to focus on getting your inner thighs together during, like, the prone work and such. But I want to give you a really, really strong, I don't know if it's a suggestion or encouragement, don't beat yourself up about this too much, because with SI pain, and you're very vague in that, so I'm not sure if you're still having pain because you said you're managing it, so I'm going to guess you're not having pain, but maybe it just flares up every once in a while or something. So correct me if I'm totally off on that. This is going to be probably the hardest thing for you. For your specific issues with SI pain, that's going to be the hardest thing. So I'm assuming, and I could be wrong, that that is why you're focusing on this, because this is kind of like your last hurdle or something. Just give yourself a lot of grace. Give yourself a lot of time and just work through it very slowly. Don't beat yourself up if you don't get it all the way together, okay? So you're not crazy. If you didn't know that that was something that was going to be really hard for SI pain, then please give yourself even more grace. So a lot of people, when they teach, and even in teacher training programs, we'll just say, just keep your legs open in prone work, because this can so irritate SI pain, and so many people have it, or it can go right into their low back and such. You know, it's very connected to the SI pain and such. So just be very careful. Whenever you're teaching something, I give the responsibility to the client. I'll say, okay, now in a perfect world, your legs would be together. I want you to go as close together as you can without irritating your back or going into your back or anything like that. So the responsibility is on the client. And I'm going to put the same thing on you as an instructor. Don't go to where it's pain. So maybe you don't, your inner thighs don't touch, and that's okay. And maybe it's something, you know, it's going to take a couple years to work through getting it to eventually where it touches. And maybe it never does, and that's okay too. Everybody's body is different, and just remember there's a lot of history with that body, a lot of injuries and things over the years. It's just really important as an instructor that you have the idea of what perfection is in your mind, and that you are allowing the client to then catch that vision. Whether or not you go and actually attain that goal is a totally separate thing. And what I mean by this is sometimes the body is not going to get there, and that's okay. But you want to progress that way. So sometimes I've seen a lot of instructors that maybe like you, they have an issue with their SI pain, so they're very sensitive about that. And so maybe they never even cue clients to close their legs. I've seen this a lot where, you know, if they don't know that they're supposed to eventually be closed or that people can close their legs, it's going to be something they don't cue. Or maybe they're scared to hurt their client because it hurts them. And so as a teacher, you always want to be cautious of, am I cueing my own insecurities and problems to clients? Am I giving the client the responsibility of what is perfection, and then giving him encouragement and grace and love that we're not necessarily going to reach perfection, especially not in one session, as our American society tends to want to do. But we're just getting the vision, casting that vision of what it is and what we're working towards, so they have goals and they know when they're making progress or not. Okay, so the exercises you listed, swan on the tower, swan on the chair, all the swans, a lot of the long box stuff. And then you mentioned single leg kick, double leg kick, swimming, all this. Those are all great examples of things that are going to be very hard to keep the legs together. So here are some cues that I like and some places that I like to play with it that I'll get into after I go through your run through four. So first off, you mentioned sitting on top of the sits bones, and you said keep the medial distal end of my femur pressed gently together. I'm going to stop right there. Not sure if you're confused on terms, but this is a really common thing. So the medial, meaning the inner thighs, distal, meaning the farther end away from your core. So that would be down by your knees, pressed together. A lot of instructors focus on like squeezing the knees together when they talk about inner thigh connection. And I just want to take a step back, and this may just have been a, you meant medial proximal or something, but because this is a very commonly confused thing, I want to take a second to address it because probably somebody else that's listening didn't know this either. I see a lot of instructors cueing to keep the knees together, or if they want an inner thigh connection, they put a ball at the knees or just right above the knees. First off, I would never put a ball at a joint. You want to put it like above or below a joint, not on the joint. It's just not great for the joints. And it's not going to connect the muscles in the same way. So, okay, we're just going to assume the ball is right above the knees, but again, it's down low by the knees. When you do this, if you look at the actual anatomy of the adductors, so the inner thigh muscles, there's like six of them, and several of them have multiple heads, so depending on how you want to think about it, there's lots. A lot of them only attach, they all go from the pubic bone, the pelvis, down to the thigh bone. And a lot of them are very high up attaching to the thigh bone. You've got some of the adductor magnus head and the gracilis that actually come down to the knee joint. But the rest of them really are attaching much higher up. So especially like pectineus and adductor brevis, they're very, very high on the thigh bone, and those are some really big muscles. And honestly, I think that it's probably a better choice to put the ball, like, up in your crotch, for lack of a better term, because what's going to happen is you're not only going to get the ones that fire down long, you know, the gracilis and the adductor magnus, but you're also going to get the shorter ones that are higher up. And remember, all the time, when you're working with muscles, the shorter the muscle is, the more it's focused on stability, which is what you want with SI joint pain and such. So you really want those short guys. So I would roll that ball up. And I think the little purple balls, so they're about the size of a tennis ball, for those of you that might not have seen our purple balls in the studio. You could use a tennis ball. One of the things that I love the most, and this is so not what it's designed for, but the carriage stoppers for the reformers, they're always right there on hand. I don't even have to bend over and get them out, the balls out of the basket. They're a nice size. They're not even as, you know, large a diameter as the balls. And they've got the stick hanging out of them that, you know, is how you stick it in the carriage. And so I will stick it up in between their thighs so it's right up against their crotch. And I can do that without sticking my hand in their crotch. It would be wildly inappropriate to do because I can hold the peg. Okay, so you could alternately roll up a towel and have the client put it in there themselves, or a sticky or something. But you want something maybe an inch or inch and a half or so in diameter, because when you put it that high up there, you know, and you're squeezing, what you're just looking for is something that is just giving you a little feedback. Okay, this isn't going to do anything magical. It's just reminding you where you want to focus that intention. Excuse me. And that's where I want it, is way up high, because it's going to have a much more profound effect on the muscles and the pelvis specifically. So if you're really squeezing together way up high, especially towards the front, it's going to actually open up that SI area. Now, everybody works a little differently, and if you know, you could have some compensations that cause that not to work well, but for most people, that really will help that open up. Now, I'm going to finish your sentence there. Okay, so you put them between the thighs, I'm guessing lower down, I'm talking higher up. So I do this on tons of different exercises. You can just do this sitting still like you're talking about and just have that be an exercise in and of itself. When you're doing that, look at your feet. You'll see a huge thing with your feet. The angle of, like, the flat part of your foot, like the ball of your foot, they should be parallel with if there was, like, a foot bar in front of you, okay? They shouldn't be making a V between the two feet. They should be flat across, parallel to the floor as well. Let's see if that makes sense. And a lot of times, if people don't have a really good inner thigh connection and they're sitting with their legs straight in front of them up on their sits bones, their whole, like, lower leg ankle will roll in. And to me, when I look at their feet, that's a reflection of what's going on in their inner thighs. As soon as they zip up their inner thighs, the feet straighten out. Boom. You don't notice this when you're doing footwork because you have a closed chain and your feet are on the foot bar. But when you have an open chain where you're like doing something like spine twist on the mat or something, it's a really nice place to look at that, and you can see that. And that's, again, not something that people tend to cue on, something like the spine twist, but it's really important. And it's not about the feet. It's about the inner thighs. The feet are just a reflection of what's happening in the inner thighs. Okay, so that ball or carriage stopper or whatever you, or hand towel, whatever you want to use, is also a really great tool when you're doing any of these other exercises. So swan on the tower, swan on the chair. You could do it, stick it in there for swimming, you know, as long as you're not moving your legs too violently. Double leg kick, any of those kinds of things. It works really well in just keeping the focus right there, because when you add the choreography, a lot of times, zoop, you lost your inner thighs. And I'm sure that you are not the only one to have a problem with that. Okay, so number two you wrote, when doing side leg kick, or I'm sorry, single leg kick, double leg kick, swimming, etc., I press my pubic bone to the mat, unweight my belly from the floor, parentheses, engage my transverse abdominis, and lengthen my torso before moving into spine extension. Okay, so I want to talk about what's really going on here when you do that, when those cues. Those are awesome cues. Pressing the pubic bone to the mat when a client is prone, lifting the belly button off the mat, awesome cues. I use those all the time. Now, what you are trying to do here, let's just be really clear, it's, yes, your transverse abdominis should be working, but that is not what's causing the pubic bone to press into the mat or the belly button to lift off the floor. What you're doing is you're using your rectus abdominis, remember it's attached to your pubic bone, to pull your pubic bone into an actual, very slight but very important posterior tilt. Okay, so think about that. If you're laying on your belly, you're going to get more of an arch in your low back. That's not huge like you're doing the swan or something, because you're not even going anywhere, but it's more pronounced in your low back than neutral. So what we're doing is we're doing from the front, because we don't want to clench the butt cheeks, and that's where a lot of people work from. You're not talking about that, but a lot of instructors do. If you clench the butt cheeks, it does work to do a posterior tilt. However, it's going to impede you doing the extension and a lot of the work that you're going to do in 2 seconds when you actually get moving. So you want to do it from the front, and you want to have those abdominals pull that pubic bone towards your chest, aka into the floor. So I just want to really clarify that, because it's not just the transverse abdominis, although, of course, that should be engaged as well. Now, the reason this is so magical is because you have to think back, which muscles oppose the rectus abdominis. So the rectus abdominis is doing spine flexion. So the opposite of that, the opposing muscles, would be the spinal extensors. Okay, so that's why this works, is that when you have the rectus abdominis contracting concentrically, you have the opposing muscles, the back extensors, eccentrically contracting. So they're going to lengthen, and that's what you want. That's what's going to keep you out of your back, so to speak, and that's why this is such a magical cue. So it's not that you were doing anything wrong. It's just I just want to clarify and go a little deeper into the anatomy of why that works, because I don't think that's something most people understand, and when you understand it, it makes a lot more sense. Having the posterior tilt to get you to neutral is going to, coming from your abs, is actually not only going to train your abs, which is awesome, but it's also going to free up the movement at the hips so that the leg muscles aren't trying to do that and thus causing some funky things and restrictions of range of motion and such in the legs. When you try to do something like single leg kicks, double leg kicks, swimming, et cetera, you're moving your legs and you want to have them breed up, so to speak. Okay, you also wrote, my quadriceps and IT bands are very tight from years of running and cycling in my pre-Pilates days. Okay, so I want to mention this because when you try to get the legs together, and so I'll give cues like on the swimming, like feel your inner thighs brushing against each other. because women naturally do not like that, and they will start to open their legs apart so they don't rub against each other. And so just validating that you do want to feel that, and they should be that close to each other, will change the concept of what's going on for a lot of clients. I'll also give the image of, like, imagine you're swimming through, like, a PVC pipe, you know, so it's real long and narrow, and, you know, you want to touch the top of the pipe with your hand as well as with your feet, you know, as well as the bottom of the pipe and that kind of, you know, all, you can go on and on with image and such. But when you try to keep the legs together on any of these exercises, especially when you're prone, you're going to run into tight IT bands. And if you have tight IT bands, it makes the whole thing so much more difficult. And that can be a hindrance to being able to keep your legs together. Now, is this a chicken or the egg thing? Who knows? We'll never know. What I mean by that is the SI joint is, in my opinion, probably the most complicated area to unravel with Pilates in terms of figuring out the muscle balancing and what's going to, quote, fix it. Most things are pretty straightforward in terms of, okay, well, if you have this problem going on, then you need to stretch this muscle, work this muscle, you know, lengthen, and it's very straightforward. Here it's not. And I'm going to go over a little bit very briefly why it's not. Basically, you have so many muscles that attach to your pelvis, and any of those muscles could be out of balance with its opposing group. So it takes a little detective work to figure out which set of opposing muscles are off, and then you have to work on that opposing group and get that balance back. Now, here's the tricky thing. Sometimes it's not just one group. Sometimes it's multiple groups. And I've talked about this before on previous shows. This is where true detective work and comes into play, and the client really has to help you and work with you on trying to figure this out. So for you, I'm guessing from what you've said, you already know your IT bands, so the outside, the abductors are tight. With that, I'm going to go, and that's why I mentioned all the stuff about the inner thigh stuff, because those are the opposing muscles, so they need strength. And I'll tell you from my experience, and I haven't worked with everybody in the world, but the people that have come to me and I've gotten to work with in this area, I've noticed a trend that people tend to have, it's the weak adductors, tight abductors outside of the thigh. That tends to be probably the most common imbalance in the pelvis area. Now, it could also be the internal or external rotation of the hip sockets. It could also be the hip flexors versus hip extensors, so like quads versus hamstrings. And by quads, I mean the rectus femoris, because the other ones don't cross the hip joint. It could be the abs, rectus abdominis and such, versus the low back muscles, the spinal extensors, you know, flipping it off and on and such. It can even be the pelvic floor. If the pelvic floor is too tight, it can actually pull the sacrum out of alignment and such. So this is a very, very intricate, complicated area. And, you know, some of this areas you can or maybe can't work with Pilates. We'll just put a little disclaimer in there. So what I do is when I'm working with somebody, I explain that this takes a little while to figure out what's going on. There isn't a one-size-fits-all answer for this. And then I'm going to do some detective work, and they are going to help me. Now, if you pick the wrong thing after that day, they will know it because they will feel very uncomfortable. They may get some, you know, if they have sciatica, they may get the shooting back. It may get tight, and you've just stuck your stick in the bee's nest and annoyed it, okay? That's, in a lot of ways, good because you're using that pain to tell you that that's not the right thing to work on. Try something else. So what I mean by that is, so I'll do a session and I, you know, just go about my daily business of, you know, wide variety of exercises, except at the hip socket or the hip pelvis area. And I will limit it to one motion working, the opposite stretching. So, for example, I might spend a whole session and the only hip work, so to speak, I do is I work on the adductors, I stretch the abductors, the outside thighs. Okay, do not work the abductors or you totally just invalidated and undid all your work and your detective work. Don't focus on doing anything with, you know, the hamstrings or internal rotation and stuff like that, because you're just going to kind of muddy the waters to being able to find a clear answer. Now, this doesn't mean they don't do any ab work. It doesn't mean they don't do arm work. It doesn't mean they can't do a lot of exercises. But you're not doing anything else specifically really targeting those that area. Okay, and this does take a little planning sometimes. Sometimes it takes a little creative cueing or variations and such, which I know you guys have mad skills with all the different techniques and stuff we've gone over in the P3 program. That's the imbalance I would start with, because that's, again, the most common one. But then maybe if that totally was awful for them, try the opposite next time, and maybe you'll find it. It does happen to be sometimes for people the opposite. That's what I would do, and that was my little thought on your IT band. So what you're saying is very consistent with what I see as the most common imbalance in there, in terms of weak inner thighs, too tight outer thighs. So you're going to have to work on both sides of that. It could have something else in there as well. There could be another imbalance going on, but that's what you want to work on. Okay, so you said number three, short spine is a surefire way to cause a burn in the muscles across the back of my pelvis. Ah. Okay, so, but then you said long spine doesn't bother my back. Well, oddly, to me, that does not surprise me. Short spine is a huge, huge stretch, which is why I love it so much, because it feels so good opening my low back. But if it's too much of a stretch, it's going to put those muscles into almost a spasm, and that would feel like what you're talking about, that burn in the across the back of your pelvis. Because a lot of those spinal erectors, they cross all the way down and attach into that sacrum and the iliac, you know, the SI joint and all that stuff. Long spine does not have that stretch component. Long spine is much more about working the hamstrings versus stretching the backside of the body. Okay, if it's done with a nice challenge to it. Now, both of them have the fabulous spinal articulation. So if I were you, while you're working this out in your pelvis, I would leave short spine alone, or at least not go into it as deeply, meaning maybe your legs point more towards the risers and such than on long spine, but they're not pointing all the way down like parallel legs to the floor or something. So you might not want to max out your flexibility there, so to speak, and make it look perfect, even though you could do it, because it's too much for your body at this point. Now, if you take the time to really work out these imbalances, eventually you'll have that full range of motion, that potential, and it wouldn't bother you. If you keep pushing for doing it no matter what, even though it annoys you, you're just going to stay in the same muddled puddle, and you may make it worse. So I highly recommend that you embrace your pain, use it as a tool to give you information about what's good for your body and what's not. Just because it's Pilates doesn't always mean that it's perfect exercise for every person, and maybe it's just not right for this season. So stick with your long spine. Enjoy your long spine. Let your legs be a little open, and just feel, you know, when you're doing prone work, how much can I close it without it irritating? You know, that kind of a question in your head. Back to the ball or the carriage stopper between the high inner thighs. When I do that, one of the images I like to give, just to throw some more stuff out there, is I tell people to imagine the tops of their thigh bones touching. And I usually make a joke there that they won't do that. Don't worry. That would be strange. But think of it happening. And that pulls that together from those inner thighs, because remember, that's where they attach, those inner thigh muscles. And so it just helps to engage those really on a deeper level. It's also usually going to get a little pelvic floor, which is not usually a bad thing for most people. But just throwing that out there in case they do have a hypertonic pelvic floor, which would be something that a PT would diagnose or something like that. Okay, so hopefully that gives you some thoughts and things to look for and things to work on and such, and just give yourself some grace. The things you're having trouble with are probably the hardest things for your body based on your history that you've mentioned of the SI pain. If you have any questions or wanted to follow up on this and get any other thoughts, please let me know. Send me a follow-up email, and I'm glad you sent this in. Thank you. Okay. Next question. Oh, okay. This is kind of a complicated one. She wrote, hi, Katrina. I hope things are progressing well for you. I thought I'd forward you the email below because it's blowing my mind to figure out exactly what the physical therapist is saying. There are so many technical words. I think I need to break it down sentence by sentence. Please share your thoughts when you have the time. Cheers. Okay, so I'm going to read this email. And this is awful to read on the radio show because it is quite a mouthful. So I'm just going to read it over once and then we'll break it down for you. Hello. Thank you so much for all your expertise in working with Stacy. I know she's really enjoying your sessions. Happy face. I saw Stacy this week to assess some of the pelvic asymmetry that you have noticed with the Pilates work. While Stacy's active range of motion appears greater with the right leg and the left side appears to have less movement, I found that the right sacroiliac joint was quite restricted in joint movement and that the pelvic girdle muscles were tighter on the left, piriformis, glute, med, psoas, hip flexors in general, and QL. Stacy had decreased SI joint mobility with anterior-posterior movement and also with internal rotation at the hip. All this presents by creating muscle tension obliquely through the pelvis to produce restricted range of motion on the left side of the pelvis. I mobilized the right SI joint with manual mobilization techniques. I would recommend stretching the muscles surrounding the pelvic girdle bilaterally with emphasis on stretching the left side with long sustained stretches such as piriformis with some rotation, hurdler stretch, seated side flexion. Also focus on improving right-sided range of motion at the end range for joint mobility. Rotational and abduction stretches such as happy baby stretch, etc., would be really helpful. I would also suggest stretching before any stability work to ensure that stiffness is not added to. In general, it would be wise to work to the smallest range of movement, whether this is left or right. Pushing beyond either range of motion with control work will result in rotation or drop of the pelvis and add to the issue. Okay, so first off, she sounds like a nice lady, but she kind of, to me, contradicts herself because she says several different ways that you need to work on range of motion in her hips. And then at the end, she says to work the smallest range of motion on both sides and that pushing the range of motion would add to the issues. So I don't know if she just didn't write what she meant or... I have no idea. So here's what I want to say. A couple different thoughts. It is quite technical and wordy, and you know what? That's not what you're supposed to be focusing on. So while I love that she wants to converse with you about this client, I don't know if you asked for her advice or if she just gave it to you. It's not really in a helpful line for you. And she's telling you what to do, but in non-Pilates ways that are not really what we do. So what I mean by that is she's telling you to do long, sustained stretches, and she's listing all these stretches that, you know, we don't learn. This is not Pilates. Happy baby stretch, I'm pretty sure that's a yoga thing. Definitely not Pilates. So it's a little tricky in terms of what you do with this. Here's what I would focus on. Obviously, this lady's got some asymmetry in her pelvis and hips from the right to the left, and I would focus on what you're supposed to do. So look for her imbalances when this lady's in front of you. Look and see what's going on and talk to her. Talk to her. Get lots and lots of feedback, okay? And the bottom line is, especially when you're talking this detailed about, like, the pelvis and such, things change from day to day. A lot of times with cases like this, it might be, you know, more tightness on the right side one day and more on the left the next day, and it's very, very common. And like I just described with all the SI joint, my basics on how to work with it, it's very specific to the muscular imbalances, and she's not really addressing that in the same way that we talk about it. So it makes it kind of sticky. we also don't really separate things out from, like, the whole body movement, like she's describing. So the philosophy behind what she's doing is very, very different than the philosophy behind what we're doing. You know, we don't really do the long, sustained stretches because, well, quite frankly, in my opinion, they're not very effective. We do eccentric contraction work, which, you know, changes the actual resting length of the muscle versus stretching. Now, she did mention that to stretch before any stability work to ensure stiffness is not added to. Again, I don't really think stretching beforehand is effective, especially if you're cold. I don't think stretching works really that way very well for most people. What I would recommend is that you make sure the client is warm before you do anything. Hello, that's you know, kind of basic principles. And then you're going to get that with, like, footwork and things. Okay, so you don't want to add stiffness. You want to get things loosened up by having blood flow to the area and work on some stability and some range of motion, always with control and always so that she has an awareness of where balance is. So I would use a lot of cues like, say she's sitting up. Okay, do you feel both butt cheeks evenly weighted? Okay, put the responsibility in her hands of, you know, how does it feel today? You know, oh, I feel like I'm sitting more on my left butt cheek. Huge. Not only is this going to help her then address how she's supposed to do the exercise, because as soon as she starts to put her weight evenly on both butt cheeks, she's going to start firing her muscles all over differently. So in her trunk and her stabilizers, in her hips and stuff, depending on, you know, what's mobilizing and what's stabilizing, you're going to get very different things firing. And all you have to do is draw her attention to trying to find that symmetry within herself. So you don't necessarily need to go to this technical place. If you can get her to connect in and feel what's going on, not only is it going to be more powerful, but it's going to be more transferable. And what I mean by that is, okay, if I read this letter to your client, she would have no idea what this is talking about. And most likely she has no idea what the PT is actually trying to do with her. Because they do their thing and they're not like necessarily explaining what the client needs to think about in daily life. Whereas if you tell her, you know, you need to feel whether your butt cheeks are evenly weighted, like when you sit anytime. Oh, well, that's huge. And that can be transformative and life-changing just in and of itself with no exercises at all. Because her transferring that to her daily life, not only is it a lot more time that she's actually thinking about that, but it's so much more profound in terms of the application of it. So some little things like that can be far more powerful. So I don't want you to feel intimidated by all this anatomical, technical jargon. Okay, basically she's saying there's an imbalance in her pelvis. And you've probably already seen this, so you work on it. So when you see her hiking a hip or kind of weighing more on one side and kind of doing some rotation or one, the right leg goes farther than the left, bring it, rein it back in, just like you would anybody else that you see this imbalance, and do what you would normally do. Use your normal cues, and I say normal, meaning cue her towards ideal, just like you normally would. And that's going to bring about the change that this lady is talking about. So I wouldn't be rude about it to the lady, to the sweet physical therapist, but it's she just has a very different outlook and approach to it than what we're doing. So hopefully that helped you a little bit with deciphering what she was talking about and relating to her. This is a really common issue, which is why I wanted to address this, because somewhere along your career as a Pilates instructor, everyone's going to have a PT that wants to tell you what to do, and they're going to give you a lot of jargon that, you know, you may not understand. I don't want you to feel intimidated by them. I want you to, you know, take some time, maybe do some research if they're using terms you don't know and stuff. Use it as an opportunity. But again, use it to validate. I know what I'm doing with this person, and I'm being specific and looking for their muscle imbalances. And it's just a different philosophy on how to approach it than what they're doing. And it doesn't mean my way is better or their way is better. Oh, wait, our way is better. No, I'm just kidding. It's just different. It's just different. And so you want to really don't feel intimidated, I guess, is my message. Okay, so I'm going to move on to the next question, which kind of is similar. So we have kind of a little theme going. All right. Hi, Katrina. I'm feeling a bit down at the moment regarding a new client. I saw her the second time today. She mentioned she had headaches last week, but she didn't know if it was from Pilates or from going to the chiropractor, parentheses, which she goes to 1 to 2 times a week, but she doesn't have any conditions. I suggested it might be from the chiropractor because she's getting her back adjusted each time. I told her to let me know if she felt it again after this session. I got a text this afternoon saying that she can't do Pilates anymore because the chiropractor says her body isn't ready for it. So I started thinking, could I be causing the headaches? Could I have worked her too hard? I have such a hard time with clients because they're nothing like the clients in Scottsdale. Even the weak and healthy clients were in better shape and more mind-body aware than these people are. I feel like I'm taking it easy on them, lighter springs, no straps on the chair, etc. I'm embarrassed that I get depressed about one client and that I allow it to cause me to doubt myself and my abilities. I think if I was in a proper studio with other instructors, I wouldn't feel this way because I could ask for feedback. I guess what I'm looking for is for you to tell me if I should be going back to the Pilates principles, or even easier, with people that come from a chiropractor, or maybe I just need to get over myself and let these things roll off me. You're my only contact with the Pilates world. So lonely over here. Anyway, until next time. So just for our listeners, a little background, this particular instructor did the P3 program while she was apprenticing at Personalized Pilates and has since moved away to a remote part of the world where she's in a small town and working out of her house and seeing clients there. This is a very, very common scenario. And first off, I just want to say that our apprentices at Personalized Pilates, their clients are screened. So they don't get the crazy, crazy stuff. Because our philosophy is, in the beginning hours, when you're just doing, you know, your quote hours for mark off for the training, you're really working on learning the choreography and getting your cueing techniques down, and throwing every crazy client at you would just confuse the whole situation. That's not to say that we don't let people have any situations. They have osteoporotic clients and pregnant clients, probably more conditions than I would like them to have, but the really crazy stuff we do screen out. I just remember hearing about Eve Gentry, and that was this is a letter from her. When she moved away from New York and, you know, being trained under Joe and working with Joe and stuff, she moved out to New Mexico because her husband got a job out there. And she just completely felt like, I can't do Pilates with any of these people. She, you know, Joe had given her some equipment, and she had a little studio set up in her basement, and she found that nobody could do anything. And this is actually how the Pilates movement exercises, movement principle exercises came to be. These are from Eve Gentry's work. They're not actual Pilates exercises because Joe Pilates didn't create them. And that's why a lot of Ramana people and stuff don't use them, because they're not from Joe. They're from Eve Gentry, and Eve Gentry passed them down through Michelle Larson and the Physical Mind Institute and stuff, which they helped open with Joan Breibart. But they're Eve's thing because she had the same experience where people like are so out of shape and just totally disconnected from their bodies and just have tons of problems, and they have no business doing the Pilates. So you are not alone, okay? People everywhere, teachers everywhere come up with this, and that's why I want to really, really emphasize the movement principle exercises, because they're so, so paramount and important. And I think most instructors, when they go through their training, they kind of dismiss them off to the side like, yeah, those are boring, those aren't interesting, let's get to the fun stuff. Because it's probably not what they need if they're going through instructor training. But what happens, and this isn't for every instructor, but a lot of instructors will come back to them once they start getting out in, quote, the real world and seeing clients that have real bodies that are really out of shape and out of touch with, and, you know, it's like their head's not even attached to their body. So don't feel bad about that. Okay, now back to the specific client. Okay, so here's a couple of thoughts. First off, you said this is the second time you've seen her, and she's been going to the chiropractor for a long time. Okay, beware when you suggested that the headaches might be from the chiropractor, I totally agree with you. You just, like, shot yourself in the foot, though, because who is her loyalty to? Yeah, the chiropractor. She has no loyalty to you. You just saw her twice, you know? So who is she going to trust? You or somebody that has a, you know, doctorate? Of course, the chiropractor. You just shot yourself in the foot right there on multiple levels. So first off, you need to be aware, and this is a lesson for everybody to learn, don't ever talk bad or be disparaging about a chiropractor, a PT, another Pilates instructor. We get a lot of snowbirds that come in and will live in Phoenix, Scottsdale area just for the winter, and they have other Pilates instructors that have recommended they continue their Pilates with us. And I can't tell you how many times we have people that, I mean, they don't know a short spine from, you know, the 100. And we're like, what has this instructor been teaching them? And there's nothing wrong with them, you know. And or, you know, they're osteoporotic and they're doing teasers and stuff and roll-ups. And you're like, holy cow, why in the world? Don't talk bad about another instructor, another healthcare professional in any sense. It doesn't make you look professional, and you'll actually cause the opposite to happen. So I think that's a big part of what happened. Okay, now, this is another issue. Okay, so you said that the chiropractor, she goes to 1 to 2 times a week, but she doesn't have any conditions. And then you also said that the chiropractor said she can't do Pilates anymore because her body isn't ready for it. Okay, so I'm going to put this out there, and this could ruffle some feathers, but I love chiropractors. I swear by mine. She's amazing. Love her. My first experience with a chiropractor was actually in a Pilates studio. I had never been to a chiropractor until I did my first Pilates teacher training, and the studio was very unique. They actually shared the space with a chiropractor, and he loved Pilates, and, I mean, almost all the clients did both. It was awesome. It was a great, you know, worked so well together. And I thought that all chiropractors were like that. And I came, I moved back to Phoenix and started looking for chiropractors to work with and such. And a friend of mine was a chiropractor, so I started sending all my clients over there. And I quickly realized that just like Pilates instructors, all chiropractors are not created equal. That means that not all of them are talented in helping people. Not all of them are really good at what they're doing. But insurance will keep feeding them clients, at least in the U.S. So that's a sticky situation in terms of I would always check out any chiropractor that you send somebody to before you send them to a chiropractor. So have them work on you and see if you like the way they operate and the way they adjust and, you know, that kind of thing. Very, very important. Don't ever just send anybody. And this goes for PTs as well, okay? Now, also, you have to remember, this chiropractor, look at it from their side. Okay, you have a client that's coming once or twice a week, that all of a sudden they started taking Pilates, and the Pilates instructor says their headaches are because of you. Oh, my goodness. What are you going to tell them to do? Yeah, stop the Pilates. They're a threat to your business. They're going to make your client stop coming to you. Okay, you see what I'm saying? I'm not for sure that this is what the chiropractor was thinking, but that happens a lot. You know, a lot of chiropractors and Pilates instructors are very aware of the fact that clients have limited budgets. If a client comes in for Pilates 2 or 3 times a week, they may not be able to have the money for the chiropractor 2 or 3 times a week. Okay, so most clients are going to have to pick or share it. And let's face it, you know, if the chiropractor is doing their job, they shove the person out of there and they shouldn't have repeat clients, you know, kind of thing. I mean, at least it shouldn't be ongoing for years and years and years kind of a thing. That's my opinion. Okay, so now on to the real issue. She had headaches. Totally could be from the Pilates. Yes. Totally could be from the chiropractor. Yes. How do we know? We don't. It could totally be from some gas fumes in her house, or it could be from, you know, something she ate. It could be from the tension that her husband said he wants to divorce her. We have no idea. And unfortunately, you're not ever going to know. So be careful what you blame it on. Do the best you can with what you have at that moment, meaning look for the imbalances that you see in her body that day, work on them, work appropriately. If she's, you know, able to do, you know, X, then add on to it. If she's not, then back off of it, you know. So I don't think that just because somebody comes from a chiropractor, you need to only do movement principle exercises. Definitely not. A lot of people go to chiropractors proactively, I do, to get themselves, you know, tip-top shape and, you know, keep things stable, especially now on, like, all these pregnancies. You know, my ligaments are looser, and I need a little help keeping them in place and such, so it's a little different, especially when I'm pregnant. There's a lot of reasons why people could and should go to chiropractors, and you just want to tread lightly and make sure you don't step on people's toes, and that you keep in mind what your scope of practice is, that, you know, we don't know what's causing your headaches. And you know what? If you are causing your headaches, that just means that you need to maybe do a little better job at getting feedback from her. How does this feel? You know, this should be felt in the muscles in the front of your neck. Are you feeling it in the front of your neck or the back of your neck? You know, talking to them, asking them questions, giving them responsibility. The more you can do that, and get them talking and feedback from them, the better you're going to be able to assess whether the headaches are from you, and if so, what you could be doing differently. So hopefully that helps. I totally want to encourage you that probably has nothing to do with you and very possibly has nothing to do with the chiropractor either. There are so many factors in there. I mean, hormones are a huge factor with headaches, and so are our food allergies. So, yeah, it's just really, really hard. There's a lot. I'll be the first one to admit, I know that I will get a migraine within hours of talking about certain situations or with certain people. If it really bothers me emotionally, I will get a migraine, and that's how I know. So again, it can be a completely emotional thing, and we're gonna talk about that in level two a little bit. So there's so many confounding factors there. It's really hard to tell, but don't feel bad about what you did. Learn from it and move on so that you can become an even better instructor. And I really appreciate you sending in this question because there are so many different layers and levels of things that other people are going to go through. And it's great when people can learn ahead of time. Oh, you know what? I've only worked with this person a couple times, and they've worked with that PT for years. I remember a radio show about this. I need to not talk bad about that PT, you know, that kind of thing. Everybody can learn from it. So I really appreciate that. All right, so we are going to go ahead, and I think I have a couple of quick questions I might be able to get to. Let's see. All right. Hi, Katrina. I was thinking about the round back on the short box. Should I be cueing people as they come back up to keep the C curve in their spine even after they come up over their pelvis and then stack back up to tall? What's the short box exercise called where you hold the dowel round forwards towards your feet and then slide the bar along your body to roll back into the well? I'm not even sure if I described that correctly, but hopefully you know what I'm getting at. I've seen it in videos before, but I don't remember in our repertoire. It might be one of those I never practiced and forgot. She's got this funny little smiley faces doing funny things. Okay, so yes. Okay, when you're cueing people on the round back, the way I like to explain it is you have them curving up so that from your head to your tail it's one big C curve, and you're really focusing on the low back because that's where it's not going to want to be a C, until you get to the point where you lose tension on the strap. So again, the foot strap should be right at the crease of the front of the ankle, and you should have a flexed foot. The most common thing I see wrong, and I see this all the time, is that people have the strap just where their toes are holding onto it. Now, not only is that kind of dangerous, in my opinion, very dangerous, but you're missing a lot of the fabulous work of the tibialis anterior, which is a huge weak spot for a lot of people. You know, people with shin splints, all sorts of stuff. They need that tibialis anterior really working. And I find that a lot of people are just weeny weak right there. So I think that's why they do it at their toes, because it's easier. And, of course, we don't want easy. When you see that, that's like, whoop, red light blinking. That's what they need to work on. Okay, so put it at the ankles. And when you come up and over, you don't want to look at, like, when the shoulders get exactly over the pelvis. Look at when they start to lose the tension on the foot strap. And that's where you start to roll up to sitting tall. Okay? Now, that's a little different answer than most people will tell you. Most people will tell you just when you get your chest over your pelvis, you roll it up. But, again, I like to connect people into the why. That's about the time that you lose the tension on the foot strap. And that's why you sit up. Okay, so the short box that you hold the dowel, you round forward, and then roll it back into the well, that is called the fire baton. It's not my favorite exercise. I will be quite honest with that. It's got a lot of choreography, and a lot of people can't do it. But I do use a lot of different pieces of it. So the hinge forward is really nice to have people really find that hinge. And you can just do that as a really, really beginner exercise versus the whole fire baton is crazy hard. So, yes, that is the full thing. It is in the balanced body curriculum. I believe it's in level 2 reformer 2. So if you want to look it up, there it is. That's where most of the short box stuff is. And, it probably is one of those you practiced and forgot. I don't have it, we don't do it a whole lot just because a lot of people can't do the full roll back, but you can modify it and just not go all the way back just like you do round back on the short box. So you can play with that. On that note, when you do hinge forward and then round all the way towards your feet, you will lose tension on the strap. So just to clarify, that's not the same thing I was talking about before. You have to lose tension on the strap for that one. Okay, so that is going to be it for tonight. I'm going to save the rest of the questions for later. I hope you guys have a great night. Now, remember, if you enjoyed the program, please go on iTunes and rate it. Let us know what you think. You can even write a little blurb about what you think of it, what you like, what you don't like, whatever. But rate it so that we can get those ratings, which will help other people find the P3 program and get to benefit from it. Okay, so that's it for tonight. And just remember that everybody deserves to enjoy movement, and you guys are the ones that get to help them enjoy it. Have a great night, and I'll talk to you next week. Send those questions in. ¶¶